Well, good morning and welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us, whether you are listening on WILL AM or you might be watching us online, because indeed we are webcasting this morning's show, this hour of the show, at will.illinois.edu. In either case, welcome. The producer for the show, Harriet Williamson, and Jason Croft is at the controls for this hour. This morning, we have the second in a kind of a series of programs that we're doing looking at housing, and particularly the need for affordable housing in East Central Illinois, but primarily in Champaign and Vermilion counties. We talked about it a little bit yesterday with guests from the cities of Urbana and Champaign, and took a look at some figures that come from the most recent census. This is something that's also been written about by our friends and partners at CU Citizen Access, and that is very simply that you look at the cost of housing, it's gone up in the last 10 years much faster than people's incomes have gone up. So this is something that, in fact, some people have called the forgotten housing crisis, and that is the need for affordable housing, decent, affordable rental housing, particularly for families. It's something that we see certainly in Champaign and Vermilion counties, and you see it all across the country. So we decided we'd like to give some attention to these issues. We're doing these radio programs, and then also tonight on WILL Television, we'll have a live show with a panel of guests to talk about the issue and also about how people are trying to address that. And we'll have a developer from Danville, and we'll have someone who is involved in Habitat for Humanity, and a number of guests will be sitting with us around a table to talk. So if you can, tune in for that show. That's tonight at 8. We're also happy here in the studio to have with us two guests, Edward Bland and Greg Hillary. Ed Bland is the Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County, and Greg Hillary is the Executive Director of the Danville Housing Authority. And we wanted to take some time and give some special attention to the question of the issue of public housing, because I think it's greatly misunderstood. So we're here to talk about that, to ask some basic questions, give folks a chance who are listening, a chance to also call in with their questions. 333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Well, thank you both very much.
Good morning, David.
I think just we should start out. I don't know what kind of perceptions or ideas people have about public housing what sort of understanding they have of what public housing provides and why it exists at all. Well, let me ask you, maybe I'll start here with Ed Bland. Tell me about, you know, what's the function of public housing? What need is that intended to address?
Well, public housing is, the need is to address and provide affordable housing for families who cannot, you might say, pay rent in the open market. That's the basic need for public housing, to deal with the poorest of the poor. You have families that may be the working poor. And so the purpose is just to have housing available for families who cannot afford to pay what you call that high market rent, that you might say people who are income maybe just a little higher.
Yeah.
I would say that's the main purpose.
So how many people do you serve? Does the Housing Authority of Champaign County serve?
Well, presently we have 443 public housing units. And then also we have a Section 8 program. We have roughly 1,500 what we call housing charge vouchers. That program, we pay private landlords to have families rent from them. So our Section 8 program is our largest inventory here in Champaign County.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably the case. I expect the case in Danville. I expect the case in a lot of places that actually the Section 8, and we'll talk about some more about what that is, is bigger than the public housing, the thing that people really think of as public housing.
Right. Ours is actually a little bit closer. We've got 537 units of public housing, which part are family and part are senior disabled. And currently we have 520 Section 8 vouchers leased. We do have authority from HUD to issue as many as 680. But again, it's controlled by the dollars, not the number of vouchers that you can issue. So we can currently afford right around that 500 number. So that's how many we have out.
And how does the demand compare with the either the space or the vouchers that you have available?
Well, I think the demand is significantly higher than what the amount of vouchers we have. For the past 2 years, we've opened our wait list up for just 5 days, and each time we've had well over 700 applications in just a few days. And there's probably 600 or 700 folks on the wait list right now, and we might be able to lease up just a few of those a month based on attrition.
Yeah. What about in Champaign County?
Well, in Champaign County, we opened the section of wait list back in November, and we took in over 2,700 applications. And we're in the process. We're going to do a lottery drawing. We will have 400, and we're going to do the lottery drawing the second week of April to put 400 on the wait list. And as Greg just said, and through nutrition, as folks leave our program, then from that 400, we will be able to lease up a few. But that 400 would be enough to last Champaign County probably for the next, I'm going to say, at least 3.5 years, depending on funding from HUD.
Yeah. Have you seen demand increase in recent years?
Well, for Champaign County, the demand have gone up, and I think that's universal across the country. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a greater demand due to the economy. I would say in Champaign County, as well as other parts of the country, demand have gone up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think our demand has gone up too, and you know, Vermilion County's unemployment rates are high. There's just a lot of folks that need assistance. You know, we're 94-95% leased up in our public housing program, and the Section 8 program is basically at capacity.
Mm. And I think that, you know, when people think about public housing, they're going to think about housing that is constructed, owned, and operated by the housing authority.
That's correct.
And indeed, you do have some
correct
housing like that. But more than that, it seems that what you have moved more and more into this other area, this thing that again, I think the old name is Section 8. What is it you're really calling the choice?
It's a housing choice,
housing
voucher,
choice
program.
Voucher program.
That's kind of how it's migrated.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It falls under the 8th section of the housing code. That's where.
Oh, that's where
that
the 8 comes
yeah
from.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and that's I think that perhaps people aren't maybe going to be as much aware of that aspect of the program. Maybe you can talk about exactly what's the idea there. What's the idea behind Section 8?
Well, I think the value of Section 8, the idea when it came back into the mid-70s was to not try to concentrate poverty, is disperse it out amongst the community, put it in neighborhoods right next door to folks that maybe have a lot more income, so you didn't have a concentration. Mm-hmm. And it's a very valuable document. If you maintain your eligibility for a Section 8 voucher, you can take that and move anywhere in the country. You know, if you would get a job or have a decision to move to Texas or California, you could take that voucher with you, and it works out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the other piece that Greg is saying, too, is it allow families, too, to have what you call the housing choice voucher, to become homeowners. And with that program, the housing authority will support the mortgage if it's an able-bodied person for the first 15 years. If it's an elderly or disabled person, that Section 8 voucher will support that mortgage for 15 years. So it gives them more flexibility, as Greg just mentioned. It gives them the opportunity to be a part of what you call the mainstream community, where in public housing, when it was first built, public housing kind of segregated the poor from the rest of the community. And so you had public housing was in the community, but it was not a part of the community. Whereas mm-hmm. Section 8, the families actually are living as part of the community and have interaction with families and children, all socioeconomic level.
Mm-hmm. So that's I think it's a good point to make that there is part of the program is designed to try to foster home ownership. So it's not just about trying to help people with a rental.
Right. It does serve both purposes. I mean, we currently are not in the homeownership piece, but we're investigating that because I think it's a great part of the program. We just have not started that piece of it. But, you know, to be able to assist the family because, you know, the program then pays the landlord directly, whatever the housing authority's piece of that would be, then the tenant would pay the balance.
Mm-hmm. Let me just quickly introduce again the guests that we have for this part of Focus. Greg Hillary is the last person you heard. He's the executive director of the Danville Housing Authority. And also with us is Edward Bland. He's the executive director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County. And we're talking about specifically about public housing in Champaign and Vermilion counties, trying to talk a little bit about what it is, the need it's intended to address, and how it works. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have email as well, will-talk@illinois.edu. And this is part of a series of programs that we're doing, trying to look at the need for affordable housing in East Central Illinois. It's something that we're doing in partnership with the folks at CU Citizen Access. And there is a lot more on this issue available on their website. So you might want to take a look at that, cucitizenaccess.org. And you can also go to our website for some more features about housing, particularly the series that we're working on that we're calling Neighbors, that takes a look at what it is that makes for a good neighborhood and how people connect with the place they live. You can see that at willconnect.org. I think we should talk, or I should ask you to talk a little bit more about the mechanics of Section 8 and exactly how it works. So the idea is that people or a person or a family should be able to choose where they want to live and that they'll get help with the rent. So how exactly does that work?
Well, what happened is the families issue a voucher, and naturally we have what we call payment standards. The federal government have what's called the fair market rents for each jurisdiction, and then the housing authority have a payment standard. We can either go 10% above the fair market rent the HUD set or 10% below, depending on funding, because I think we all know that although we may have, we might have 1,000 vouchers, that doesn't mean we would have enough money to cover all of those 1,000 vouchers. Mm-hmm. So naturally, when the family issue a voucher, before issuing a voucher, we do several things. We look at their income. We do criminal background checks. Here in Champaign, we do criminal background checks, and we look at the income. We don't do a credit check because, really, most of the families, if we did a credit check, we probably would not be housing anyone because not only do the families we deal with may have credit issues, but just the mainstream American have credit issues. Then we do the criminal background check, and then we, after do that with their income, and then we determine based on that, we give them a voucher based on the family size. So depending on the family size, they may need a one-bedroom or a two-bedroom or three or four or five or six-bedroom, depending on family size. And once we issue that voucher, they go out in the community and they look for a unit. And they get what you call a request, and they take that with them, and the landlord fill in where the tenant will be paying for rent and paying for, the tenant will be paying any of the utilities. Mm-hmm. And once that is completed, they bring that back in. And then a caseworker would look at that, depending on the income, to see if the unit is affordable. Once we determine the unit is affordable, then we will schedule the unit for an inspection. Because we are required to do an initial inspection prior to the tenant moving in to make sure the unit passes what you call housing quality standards. In some jurisdiction, they may use the city inspection codes, but we use what you call HQS here in Champaign County. Mm-hmm. And that's the initial process. I'm sure Greg may want to add something to it.
Ours is extremely similar. As Ed said, we do a housing quality standard inspection on any new property. And that also happens on a reoccurring basis, too. At least annually, we go out and reinspect the property when the clients are up for their recertification. And then if the tenant or the landlord would call and ask us to come out, if there's a problem or something, we would come out and reinspect. But the process is very, very much the same.
Mm-hmm. And so the payment of the money then goes directly to the landlord.
Correct. Right. Based on the tenant's income, let's, you know, for example, maybe a two-bedroom might be $500. The tenant's income would allow them to pay $200. And the housing authority would issue a check then directly to the landlord for the $300. The client is responsible to issue their money directly to their landlord for the balance.
So that it is, in most cases, there are people who are in this program that are also, they're paying part of the cost of the rent themselves. Just the issue is that they couldn't pay the whole $500.
Correct. Right. Yeah. And there are some that are the lower of the lower income that you know, we pay the lion's share of that rent to the landlord.
Right. And then also, as Greg's saying, that's the same procedure we have here in Champaign. Mm-hmm. And then as the income go up over the years, it may reach a point where now they may start off where we may be paying, say, 80% of the rent. They're paying 20%. And over the years, they may get to the point where they're paying 80% of the rent. We're paying 20%. Or it may get to the point where as the income go up, they are able to pay 100% of the rent. But it's a good program. It allowed them to pick and choose where they want to live. They can get a voucher from the housing authority. They can use it local, or they may decide with that voucher to move to another jurisdiction within the state of Illinois or out of the state of Illinois, including two territories, Guam and Puerto Rico.
So I suppose the catch here, well, maybe that's an unfortunate word to use, but the provision here is that the landlord has to be willing to accept this, so that there's no, so it's up to individual landlords. Would they want to participate like this, or would they not?
You know, and we do have some landlords that love the program because they know we're screening the clients. Like Ed said, we do a full FBI criminal background check. We're inspecting the property to make sure it meets standards. Then there's some landlords that just choose not to. But they do have to, as Ed explained, the fair market rates. I believe the fair market rates in Vermilion County are probably a bit lower than they are here in Champaign County, which makes our payment standards a little bit lower. Even though we're paying 110%, it still creates a lower revenue stream for the landlords in general. Mm.
We have a caller here to bring in the conversation. Let's do that. There's someone who is listening this morning in Mahomet, and that is line number one right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to bring up is the incentive for people to work and, in addition, bring up their abilities to move out of or pay more on the housing if they have, you know, utilities that can be subsidized or TANF payments or food stamps or other public aid things. I'd like to know how that all works together, because it seems that some people who are in public housing do not want to work because it will disturb some of the other programs that they're in and therefore increase the amount they have to pay for housing and alter the other programs. Thanks.
All right. Well, can you talk about that?
Well, what we do as part of determining what their portion of rent is going to be, we also look at what the utility allowance is going to be. So that's calculated in before the rent is set. I'll give you an example. Let's say if a landlord is paying all the utilities with the rent, and let's say it's $600 for a two-bedroom unit, say $600, and that includes all the utilities the landlord is paying. But if the tenant is paying any portion of that, then we do a recalculation and we subtract that out. And so that's a part of the calculation before the rent is determined, the portion of rent that the tenant is going to pay. We determine if the tenant have any utility costs. And then also, presently, we also give them a deduction for minor children up to age 18, $480 per child. If they are working, have to pay child care, they get a deduction for that before the rent is set. And also, if they are disabled or elderly or handicapped, they get a medical deduction elderly, $400. And then if they have medical expenses above 3% of the gross income, we also give them a deduction for that. So there are several deductions that are taken into account before the rent is determined that the tenant must pay.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, we do the same. But I do understand where the caller is coming from, that those state payments that they receive, either TANF or food stamps, those are all part of the overall calculation. They do foot into the overall rent calculation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something Greg just said also, and Greg will probably testify to this. We don't count the food stamp money that they get right. for food stamps. We only use the cash payment, but if they're getting food stamps, that's not something that we use for calculations.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Just again, let me quickly introduce the guests. Edward Bland, he's Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County. Greg Hillary is Executive Director of the Danville Housing Authority. We're talking about public housing as part of a series that we've been doing here, looking at the problem of affordable housing or the need for affordable housing in Champaign and Vermilion counties. And questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. One of the questions when we were talking about this yesterday that came up was a question about the relationship between tenants and landlords who are in the Section 8 program. And I think that there was the question on the part of the caller was, well, you know, if you're a landlord and you have someone who's a bad tenant and they're in the Section 8 program, can you get rid of them? Do you expect them to meet all of the same standards and behave themselves just like any of your other tenants? And if not, do you have the same rights to take action? And it seemed that the answer to the question was, well, yeah. I mean, it doesn't. You have to be a responsible tenant. It doesn't matter whether you're in the Section 8 or not.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever I talk about Section 8 to folks, I try to explain that this is like an equilateral triangle. I mean, you've got the housing authority, you've got the landlord, and you've got the client. Mm-hmm. And it's really an equilateral triangle. The housing authority has responsibilities to the landlord and to the client, and the client has responsibilities back to the landlord. I did have a conversation with the landlord not too long ago. He said, I don't understand why I have to put new doors on the front of the kitchen cabinets because I put them on there 6 months ago and they're off again. And I said, well, you can't do pull-ups on kitchen cabinet doors, so either you need to send that tenant a bill for those damages, and if they don't pay, then evict them. I mean, just like you would any other client.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree with Greg. You hold the Section 8 tenant to the same standard you hold your non-Section 8 tenant. They have a contract with the landlord, which is that lease that they signed. And if they are violating that lease, they should treat them the same you would treat the non-Section 8 person for violating the lease. And the housing authority will support that.
You know, and sometimes we have a situation where there's a repair that needs to be made and the landlord may not be making that repair. And if the tenant calls us and we find that repair that needs to be made and to bring the unit back up to HQS, then we'll issue the tenant, I'm sorry, we'll issue the landlord a letter of repair. And then based on what that repair might be, you know, that would determine how long they had to make that repair. But if they chose not to do that, we would ultimately abate the unit, which stops the cash flow to the landlord, and issue the tenant a voucher to move so they can get into a place that does meet standards.
So do you often find that you are in the position of having to mediate disputes between tenants and landlords?
I don't know that it happens very often. Sometimes, you know, we always tell the landlords they need to enforce their lease. And as part of the HAP contract or the housing assistance payment contract that we sign with the landlord, we do have a copy of that lease. So we also know that, you know, what those requirements are. And then there are certain paragraphs that typically have to be in there that HUD requires.
Hmm. How about you? Do you find yourself often in that position?
Occasionally, not a lot, because most of our landlords really, and the tenants understand they have a contract with the landlord, and that lease, they had to follow the lease. Occasionally, we do have to meet with a tenant and the landlord to resolve some issues, but I would say 98% of our tenants really followed the lease that they had with the landlord.
Let's talk with some other folks here. Urbana is our next caller. This would be line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I asked the question yesterday, and you suggested I call back today, David.
Yes.
That has to do with people. We've got an enormous number of people in prisons now. And the people, when they come out, when they go in, they're poor, and when they come out, they're probably even poorer. So my question has to do with these criminal background tests that Mr. Bland mentioned. First of all, are they automatically ineligible for Section 8 vouchers, or is it up to the landlord to decide whether to take the person as a Section 8? And secondly, if they are not at all eligible, what other programs exist in those two communities to help ex-felons who get out of prisons relocate and become members of the community?
Well, speaking for Champaign, we do a criminal background check and we go back 5 years. If a person is a sex offender, the federal regulation is saying they are ineligible for any
period,
any subsidy at all if they're a sex offender. And also it depends on the nature of the crime, violent criminal activity. If it's a drug related, very violent, then that could delay how long they have to wait until there is a period of time where there's no, where we see no activity on their record. But we do, we go back 5 years. If a person is getting out of prison, and depending on what they got out of prison for, they may have to wait 5 years from the date they get out of prison to get a chance to reacclimate to what we call mainstream America or society again. But Champaign, we go back 5 years. And it varies from housing authority to housing authority. HUD have in place, you must do 3 years. I know when I worked in Baltimore, Maryland, they went back 10 years. I don't know at Danville how far they go back.
Well, ours is actually split. We use a 3-year on the public housing side and 5 years on the Section 8 voucher side. And if it's drug related, weapon related, or battery, domestic battery or battery, those are those types of crimes that will prevent you from being housed. You know, you're going to have to wait that 5-year period. Mm-hmm. We also have, if the folks are currently on parole or if they're on probation, they're not eligible to apply unless they're on probation for a traffic offense. But if it's anything else, they're not eligible.
Even a misdemeanor?
Yes. If it's drug-related, weapon-related, or battery-related, they're not eligible to apply.
And here in Champaign, if it's drug-related, weapon-related, it's 5 years from the date of action. If it's a misdemeanor, then we will allow them to apply. But if it's drug-related, weapon, it's 5 years from the action.
So just to pick up on what the caller said, if you have someone like that, someone who's been in prison and they get released, they got to have some place to live. Where do they go? What options are there for someone like that if they don't have the money and they can't find housing with you guys?
Well, I know the federal government is sometimes they come out with special vouchers to deal with folks who are being released from prison, and then housing authorities are able to apply for those from time to time when they come out. Because I think the government realized it is an issue. Because one of the things is sometimes housing authorities, we are accused of housing people who have criminal records. And we often get accused of that, I know. Mm-hmm. And that's universal across the country. So it's a two-edged sword. We'll criticize sometimes if we're not housing a person. And then we'll criticize if we are housing a person with a criminal background check. So we catch them on both sides.
Yeah. We do have a set of special vouchers, and these are the veteran-assisted housing vouchers. They call them VASH. They're in conjunction with the VA hospital in Danville. We currently have 60 of those, and these are a little different than your typical vouchers because these come from referrals directly from the hospital. And if the veteran is homeless and is seeking services at the hospital, then they basically qualify. And the only exclusion on the VASH program is the criminal sex offender. So they could have had a weapons charge or a drug-related thing in the last year, and the VASH program exempts that. Mm-hmm. And if they come as a referral from the hospital and we have an open voucher, they don't sit on a wait list. We give them the voucher, and the hospital typically helps them find a landlord right away.
We're talking this morning in this part of Focus about public housing in Champaign and Vermilion counties. We'll talk some more after a very short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Rachel Maddow, the popular MSNBC host, talks about her show, her life, and her new book, Drift, The Unmooring of American Military Power, in which she traces the increasing power of a president to take America to war and how the public has become disconnected from the consequences of war. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Support comes from The Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to music education. The Music Shop serves over 200 school music programs with band and orchestra instruments, a large sheet music department, thousands of accessories, and private lessons at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us, whether you're listening on WILL AM or maybe you're watching. We're online this morning. We're webcasting through our website. That's WILL.illinois.edu. That's the place you can go to listen to past programs and check the schedule for future shows here. We're doing here this morning the second in a series of programs looking at the issue of affordable housing and the problem of the lack of affordable housing, something that's not just a problem for Champaign and Vermilion counties. It's a problem all over the nation. Tonight on WILL-TV, we'll be doing a roundtable discussion, a live show, that will also be broadcast here on AM and also online. We've gathered together a group of people who come to the issue of affordable housing from different directions, and we'll talk, and we'll hope that you can tune in. Then there'll be a live chat afterwards where our guests will participate in that, and you can participate in it as well. So that all starts tonight on WILL at 8, and we hope that you can tune in. On our program this morning, we are talking about public housing, and we have two guests here with us. Edward Bland, he is the executive director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County, and Greg Hillary is the executive director of the Danville Housing Authority. We're open to your questions. We have a couple of people here ready to go. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. You can also send us an email if you'd like. And that is will-talk@illinois.edu. And we have several emails, and we have some more callers. So we'll go back to the phone here for another person. And this is someone who is in Urbana. And line number 3. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi, yes, go ahead.
Yes, hi. For the woman from Muhammad who talks about people, I guess, taking advantage of the social welfare system or whatever. I am a 54-year-old woman with a master's degree. I got sick. I became disabled. And the only housing I can live in is public or right now I live in federal housing, and that's the only way I have a home. So we're not deadbeats. My neighbors all work. They work for wages that don't support them in a way that can get them out of anything other than subsidized housing, but that was not actually my main point in calling. My main point in calling is why we're talking about Section 8 in Champaign. If you call, all you get is somebody who tells you that they don't even take names for the waiting list. So who is actually getting Section 8 help? I've been here for 3 years, and I still can't even get put on a list for Section 8 housing.
Well, that's the problem. I think we were talking earlier about the fact that there is and Ed Bland can talk about that, but that we have tremendous demand, that more demand than you can meet.
Right? Well, but you can't even get your name into the system in the first place. I mean, okay, if there's hundreds of people on the list, then add a few more hundred, but at least let us know that we have a chance at something. It's very annoying. I mean, I've lived in other places. When I first became disabled, I lived in another county, and you got your name on the waiting list. There wasn't anything available, and they told you that, but you at least got onto a waiting list where you at least had hope of something like that.
Yeah. Well, let's get
here. You call, and it's immediately. We're not taking any names or adding people to the list.
Well, let's get your response, Ms. Miller.
Okay. Hi, this is Ed Bland, Champaign County Housing Authority.
Yes, we
did open the wait list in November of 2011, and we kept it open for roughly about 30 days, and we took in over 2,700 applications. And we opened the list, and we made it clear we was going to do a lot of withdrawing once we did a criminal background check on everybody. So in 2 weeks from now, we will be doing that lottery drawing to put 400 of those 2,700 on our wait list through the lottery. And that 400 will be enough applicants based on money we receive from HUD and vouchers. We will have that 400 will last us at least for 3 years, which means 2012, 3 years, we will not open the list again until probably 2015. And normally when we open the wait list, we put a public notice in the newspaper. We also put flyers around throughout the community, making the public aware that the list is open so everyone would know when it is open.
I had no idea. I live in federal housing, and there weren't flyers here. I don't know how. I didn't know.
Like I said, what we do, we do a public notice, and normally put in the public notice section of the newspaper. We're required by federal statute to do that. But then we put flyers like at the various shelters, Time Center, Salvation Army. We left some over at Regional Planning. We had some at the library. We had some over at the Unemployment Office on Matters. We reached out to the various churches to tell them to make that announcement in the church bulletin to make the public aware, and we did that last year. I'm sorry that you were not aware of that, but the list was open last year for Section 8.
30 days.
Yeah, it was open for 30 days.
Do you understand the frustration, though?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, Greg said earlier from Danville is that the demand is greater than the number of vouchers that we receive or any housing authority receive. There are many housing authorities may have a 4, 5, 6. I heard some housing authority may have a 10-year wait list or 15-year wait list, folks just being on the wait list. And Greg may want to add something to that.
Yeah, we actually just had our wait list open just for 5 days. It was open from March 19th through last Friday. And with the demand that we have and the actual lack of funds from HUD, we only opened it for those 5 days knowing that we'd get 600-700 applications, which would last 2 or 3 years like Ed was talking about. And it's unfortunate that, okay, you get on the list then, and then, you know, we may not contact you for 3 years. And although we send out an annual notification, do you still want to continue to wait? Because hopefully something would change.
Yeah. I was wondering if you guys did follow up on the list you already have. But to the people who are listening, I mean, we're not deadbeats. You know, we have a lot of different reasons for being in the situation we are in. And when people talk about needing more subsidized housing, we need more subsidized housing. Otherwise, we're homeless. I mean, I would be otherwise homeless without the federal housing that I live in now. So when people talk about, you know, that we expect something for free or this, that, or the other thing, no. My neighbors are hardworking. They're making minimum wage. A lot of us here are disabled, and this is the only way we have a place to live, because otherwise, literally, we are living out of our car if we have one, or we are homeless.
I sure agree. I know that, you know, a lot of our clients are in the same type of situation you are. And
when they talk about things like food stamps, yeah, I qualify for food stamps. I get $16 a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm living it up on $16 a month. What do they think we're? I mean, that's what you get in food stamps for, depending on, you know, how many are in your household and such. And, you know, so they're not giving away lots of food to everybody or money for food for everybody. It's tight. It's not like whatever these other people. I know it's kind of weird to me that people are calling in, asking about problems only. Like, instead of calling in, offering up solutions, people are calling and, you know, talking about, well, what about felons? What about this? Felons aren't allowed in federal housing where I live. I can live assured, as opposed to people who live out in the communities, that there's no felons living near me. It's a safe place to be. Where I live is brand new, and more needs to be built. But I don't know why everybody's going straight to the negative in terms of call-in questions and such. It's necessary. It's a good thing. It lifts people up. It gives us a place to call our own, and that only makes us healthier mentally, and that only makes things better.
Yeah.
I just want people to know that, instead of calling in and asking about, you know, ugly aspects of this, when in fact it's a great thing. It's uplifting. It's necessary. Otherwise, you're looking at a bunch more people on the streets homeless.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling and telling
sure.
us about your,
thank you.
Your situation. How do you guys deal with this kind of situation here with the kind of systems that you're operating, have people do think negatively. They think negatively of public housing, and they think negatively wrong, you know, let's say wrongly, but they think negatively of people who have to go to public housing because otherwise they would be on the street. And how do you deal with the image issues?
Well, for the Champaign Housing Authority, I think the more we are able to educate the public on the process, because as the young lady said, just called in, a lot of our families are working. They're working families. It just so happened the economy changed, and they just need our help. A lot of the families that come to us, except for the elderly, disabled, and handicapped, a lot of the families coming to us only come to us for a short period of time, temporary housing until they get on their feet. As the young lady just said, they're not deadbeats. They just need us for a short period of time. And they really come with the attitude they're gonna take advantage of the housing, but the mission and goal is to get off the program. And I think that's what a lot of them come to us for, just for help for a short period of time.
You know, and the PR thing is something that is always a struggle. I try to get out and talk to whatever local community groups will, you know, they always need a lunch speaker or something. I do have a monthly radio show on one of your competitors over in Vermillion County that we do a 10-minute once a month, just talking about the issues and to get the information out to the public. What Ed said is exactly what we have to do. Get the correct information out.
We're coming to the point where you have maybe about 6 or 7 minutes left. I have a couple of questions that came in here by email, and I want to try to get in. Someone wants to know, if a landlord chooses not to renew a lease for a Section 8 client for non-payment or for unacceptable behavior, does that client then lose eligibility for future vouchers?
Well, for Champaign, what we always say to the landlord is if a tenant is not meeting a financial obligation, is to take them to court. And once you get a judgment through the court, then the rules say that the housing authority would have to terminate the client from the program. But it's very important for the landlord to take them into court and get that money and get that court decision. And then once we receive that, then we are required by statute to terminate the family from the program.
Okay.
That's exactly right. Once that court documents are filed, then, you know, if the client doesn't meet the requirement of the court, if they give them 30 days to pay or something, then we will terminate the client.
And what now, non-payment of rent is one thing, but just behavior that should cause that person to be evicted short of non-payment of rent, what would happen in a case like that?
Well, in case, let's say, for example, that there was a maybe a drug raid or there were firearms involved at a unit. So then now if the client would then get a charge of a weapons charge or something like that, we would start the process of termination because that's a mm-hmm. violation of their of the program.
And that's the same thing in Champaign too.
So, right, so if it's clear something that's clearly criminal activity, then that's then it sounds like you really don't have any choice.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, if it's the case of where they've damaged the property, like the example with the kitchen cabinets, yeah. You know, we tell the landlords that's not acceptable behavior. You need to charge those mm-hmm. tenants for that for those damages, and then if it gets to a point where they don't pay, again, the landlord gets the judgment. That ends the program for them.
What I guess we're coming down to maybe have about 5 minutes, and clearly here we've established the fact that there is greater demand than you can satisfy. You only have so much money that you can put into your vouchers, and of the housing that you actually operate, you only have so much. And we have waiting lists that go on for years. How can this need be addressed?
Well, I think that would have to be at a national level because the housing authority, all of us, local housing authority, we only receive X number of dollars based on the size of our program. So I think that's a national issue that only our Congress folks can maybe make some changes. And with the federal budget being the way it is today, it is an issue, uh-huh. but it's an issue, I think, much larger than we can do on the local level, mm-hmm. especially since our money comes from the federal government.
Right. I would agree there, too. And our Section 8 budget has fluctuated anywhere from $2.4 million a year to $1.6 million. And it's, you know, that if your average payment to the landlord is, say, $400 or $500, I mean, you can only service so many clients based on that.
Yeah. One of the things that I think that it is true is that if we take a look at the kind of public housing that's operated, that's owned and operated by housing authorities, that across the country, there's been a shrinkage there. Now, I don't think it's true in Champaign County. I'm not sure about in Vermilion County. But I think that there's less of that kind of housing than there has been in the past. Assuming that I'm correct in that, I wonder whether you think that it's more likely that rather than having government get in the business of building housing, that what's going to happen, you're going to continue to rely. People are going to continue to rely on really the voucher kind of program that we have talked about.
You can go first if you want to, Ed.
Well, I think the voucher program is the fastest growing program in the HUD inventory. There's no question about that. It's more money put in the voucher program than the public housing program. I know here in Champaign, what we are looking at, we are, through the ACC, we can have 607 public housing units. So we are looking at trying to get back to that 600 number for public housing units. And so we're doing some redevelopment of some of our communities, Dunbar Court. We're going to redevelop Dorsey Home. We're looking at buying some additional land. So when we redevelop Dorsey, we can build additional maybe 100 units along with the 67 units that was at Dorsey Home. We took down Dunbar, and we are which was 26 units, and going back over there will be 36 units. And also, since we are a county housing authority, we are looking at hopefully trying to redistribute our inventory throughout Champaign County and not have the bulk of the inventory just in Champaign, the city of Champaign and Urbana. Mm-hmm. So we are aggressively looking at trying to reposition our inventory as well as increase the number of units that the housing authority owns. Which still will not be enough units for everybody who need housing. And hopefully somewhere in the future, as Greg just said earlier, there will be additional money for the housing choice voucher program.
Yeah. Right. We actually reduced the number of public housing units back in the mid-90s. We took down 130 units. They had been flooded by the 100-year flood that we had back in 1990. Yeah. Since then, it's in our long-term strategic plan to reduce the density of our largest public housing development. But in doing so, like Ed talked about, expansion, we've talked to a couple different developers about putting up some affordable housing We did a study about a year ago, and there is a significant need for affordable family housing in Danville. So we are looking into that and seeing if we can do that.
Does that seems that that's a real problem, because I think that there is this perception that for developers that you can't make money building affordable housing.
It does make it challenging, and it makes the financing of it challenging. You can finance part of it through tax credits. You can probably finance it through some project-based Section 8, which is something we didn't even talk about today, or just the availability of housing choice vouchers being used. Or, as Ed said, you can possibly use your public housing ACC dollars to fund part of that development. So the financing can be 6-7 layers deep as to make it cash flow. And, if it doesn't cash flow, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. Let me just ask, as a way of finishing, maybe we have about a minute. Someone writes in this. It seems obvious there's a need for affordable housing, and that in the wake of the austerity and budget cutting at the federal level, resources to provide affordable housing are diminishing. So the question the person poses is this: is housing a right? Are people entitled to access to adequate shelter?
Well, I think you will always have folks who would need affordable housing. Through no fault of their own, they would need affordable housing. Mm. So I think affordable housing will always be needed in this country. When you look at, and statistics show that most of us are one paycheck away from the families that we are serving. So affordable housing is something that will always be needed, I think, in this country, whether it's in Champaign County, Vermilion County, throughout this country. I think affordable housing will always be needed, because you will have folks who will need it.
Yeah. You know, I tell you what, we'll have to stop. I have to give Mr. Bland the last word, because we're here really at the end of the time. I, again, just want to mention once more that the reporting that we're doing around issues of housing is something that we're doing in partnership with CU Citizen Access. And if you go to their website, that's cucitizenaccess.org, you can read a lot on this subject. You can also go to our site, willconnect.org. And do tune in tonight, WILL-TV at 8, for more discussion on this issue. For now, I want to say thanks to our guests, Edward Bland. He's Executive Director of the Housing Authority of Champaign County.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Greg Hillary, he's Executive Director of the Danville Housing Authority. Thank you.
Thanks, David. Appreciate being here.